Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Plain Refuge by Dana R. Lynn. On the run from hired gunmen, can she find safety in Amish country? After overhearing an illegal weapons deal, Sophie Larson knows two things. Her uncle's a dangerous criminal, and he wants her dead. Now, undercover cop Aiden Forster has no choice but to blow his cover and protect Sophie by hiding her and her deaf sister in Amish country. But with a mole in the police force, danger isn't far behind.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, my guest is Dana R. Lynn. She's an award-winning author who believes in the power of God to touch people through stories. She's written 18 books so far and has 19 coming out later this year, and I'm just delighted I'm going to be able to talk with her today. So welcome to my show, Dana.
Thank you, Sarah.
Now, we were talking just before we started recording about genres. And, we both write romantic suspense, but within that, you can have little kind of subspecialties, I guess, and yours is a little bit more unusual. So can you talk a little bit about the genre that you write in under romantic suspense?
Sure. So when I first started, with just regular romantic suspense, and then I started to veer off my third book into what is called Amish adjacent, and what that is some of your characters can be Amish or not, but it's usually set in Amish settings, or there's some connection with Amish side characters. I've had hero and heroines who were Amish. I've had cops. I've had paramedics. It doesn't have to be strictly Amish. It's just there's the Amish element added into the story.
Now, I see that your bio says you live in rural Pennsylvania. So do you live near Amish communities?
Yes. We have a community. In fact, there's several Amish families right on my yard. Right on my road. I have friends who used to be Amish, and I actually have I work as a teacher for the deaf and hard of hearing, and sometimes my work has taken me into Amish homes.
So you're able to kind of, have that firsthand knowledge of, how they act. I liken it to having, your brother-in-law as a police officer. Well, that's just fantastic if you write romantic suspense, right? you have that kind of instant, I don't want to say laboratory, because it's not like we look at people that way, but as writers, I know we're always gathering information, and if you're like me, Dana, I'm always filing it away going, I might use that one day.
Absolutely. And I find it fascinating because if you know anything about Amish communities, they are all different. It all depends on where they are in the country, what rules their bishop has set down for them. And so it's fascinating to be able to talk to people who live in different communities or go visit these communities and find what their differences are. And I'm always the person saying, what could I do if?
Exactly. And, we shouldn't be surprised because, I live in Virginia. I live in Northern Virginia, and I grew up in Southern Virginia, and sometimes people think they're like two different states, because people are so different. In Northern Virginia than they are. It's much more slower paced, much more, a little bit more rural feel to it in Southern Virginia. And, why should we expect, Amish communities to be any different? Of course they're all going to look different because people are different.
Right.
So what has been one of your fun facts that you learned about the Amish that you weren't expecting?
Well, one thing that I really thought was interesting in talking with some of my friends, one of my friends mentioned that she was going to be going to a Tupperware party next week, and then the week after that, she was holding one in her house, and that really surprised me.
I'm surprised. First of all, they're still having Tupperware parties. Okay, I just totally didn't realize that.
Well, it's where I live. Tupperware parties are huge. It's Tupperware and also Pampered Chef.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, those are really big around here, and that really surprised me. I didn't
right. That an. So this, so you're saying somebody in the Amish community was having a Tupperware party? Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get to go? Because that would have been really fun.
I did not get
to
go.
Oh, man.
But she let me order from her anyway. So I put in my order.
Oh, Dana, just think about what you could do with a Tupperware party in one of your books. I mean, I can't wait. I hope you put that in there somewhere, because that would just be really kind of fun, I think, to have in your book. Or maybe I'll do something with a Tupperware party. That would be fun. Okay. I know someone who sells Tupperware. She just says she doesn't generally do parties anymore. So learn something new every day, I'm telling you. So so how do you ensure that your books are accurate? Because I know that, you know, if you're like me, we want our books to be true. And how do you do that? Because you're writing about sometimes communities and, you know, law enforcement and all that kind of stuff jumbled together.
Well, a lot of it is, you know, doing your research, having conversations with people who are actually in the field, or having conversations with people who live in communities. With the Amish communities, there's a little bit, I mean, if you make up a community, some of my communities are made up, they don't have to be as exact as one community.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because there is some leeway there, but when I'm writing about a community, even if it's a made-up community, I know I want to get the beliefs accurate. I want to get the clothing accurate. You know, what technology are they allowed to use? What advances are they not allowed to use? So going to visit places, like a couple years ago, I went to visit New Wilmington, Pennsylvania. I've been to Shipshawana, their community, obviously Spartansburg. This coming year, I want to go to Lancaster and visit them. I mean, just whatever you can do to get that flavor.
Right.
To make sure that you are getting your facts right. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what we do. We all strive to do that because we don't want readers to read our books and be like, that's just impossible. To have, because we've done it, right? We've read a book, and if you know the area, you're like, you can't. I was reading a book, and I can't remember. It was a secular author, and I can't remember who it was. I'm so bad with remembering book titles and authors. I'm ashamed to admit it. I'm just terrible at that. But it was about something about the Washington, D.C. metro system, and they had the character doing something, and I'm like, no, they were putting coins in to go through the turnstile. And I'm like, no, we've never had coins. It's always been paper tickets, you know, or something like that. And I was just, it made me, they could have looked it up. It would have taken 5 seconds, to look it up. So I'm like,
I know exactly what you mean. I mentioned that I'm a teacher for the deaf and hard of hearing. That is one of those subjects when you're talking about deaf culture or language development. I have trouble sometimes reading other people's books with deaf characters unless they've done their research, because I've seen quite a few incidents where it's like, no, that's not how you make that sign, or That's not how a deaf child would learn language. I mean, there's so many instances where it just hit me as off.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm the same way with, like, kids. Sometimes they have, like, a three-year-old talking like they're 10. I'm like, okay, I don't know any three-year-old who's going to talk like that kind of thing. And I'm just, it's not, you know, it's not, I don't think it's that hard to kind of do the research. And I'm not saying these people didn't, but obviously they didn't enough. And I know there's probably, and I'm not saying that because I'm sure I've made mistakes in my book. We've all have, where we thought something or did something and it's not accurate, but I do try. I try really hard, as it sounds like you do as well, to make it as accurate as possible.
Well, and I think sometimes that's where we need to give authors grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way that any author can research every possibility
yes.
correctly. So you can usually tell if they have made a good effort to get their facts
right.
So, while sometimes if they get something incorrect, it might be like, oh, at the same time, I'm not going to put down the book because of one inconvenience.
Exactly.
Because, like I said, we need to give each other grace and know that they are doing the best they can.
Right. And sometimes it aggravates me because we all have our little pet peeves, okay, that just drive us crazy in my writing. And I'm sure I do something that drives my readers crazy, too, and you try not to, but there's those little things that we do. And I would never put that in a review for a person, you know, or that kind of thing. It's just internally sometimes I'm like, and then it's just a reminder, oh, right, I need to be careful how upset I get because I'm sure I've done it. You know, the same thing, too. So what are some questions you hear when you say you write romantic suspense?
Well, one question that I have gotten is, you know, what kind of thoughts or ideas do I get that might set me apart from other writers? Like me and my friends were talking about the other day how they write contemporary romance, and when they go someplace they're thinking, oh, this would be a good proposal scene, this would be a good scene. And I'm thinking, oh, that would be a good place for a sniper to hide.
Yeah.
Or that would be, I mean, and it's just the way, I mean, after writing so many romantic suspense books, it's just the way your mind starts to think, what is the worst possible situation that I could put in this place? And it's not something you do intentionally. It just kind of happens.
Right. Let's start reading. Don't worry. We're not going around thinking of where snipers could hide. But if we need to put a sniper someplace, we are going to have lots of possibilities. Yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of funny how our minds work, isn't it? That we're always looking for kind of looking at things in maybe a little different perspective. I agree. And I always think, yeah, I really should clear out my search history on Google a little more often. Oh, my goodness. Good thing I have an author website. So at least I'm out there saying, hey, I write romantic suspense. So if you see me Googling poisons, it's not because I don't love my husband anymore. Or anything untoward like that. It's research for a book.
Well, and it's entertainment.
Yes.
And our world really needs entertainment.
That is so true, Dana. So true. You know, it used to be, I think, that romance books, romantic suspense, people were kind of like, you know, but now I think people are realizing just how valuable we are as writers of these genres, right? I mean, we provide that feel-good, happy ending, and for us, we also take them on a wonderful little ride, you know, to get there with some suspense and hopefully help people forget about you know, things that are going on in the world at this time.
Right. And even though there is the suspense and the thriller part of it, I mean, you don't laugh at people who watch cop shows on TV.
Right. Yes, that is so true.
But for some people, it's just the book is the best place for them to have an escape.
Mm-hmm.
So, and don't get me wrong, I watch the cop shows on TV, too. I love them.
No, of course. Of course we do.
Oh, I completely forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay. That, you know what? This is what conversations are like. We often forget what we're talking about. So I'll just ask another question. We're almost out of time, but I think we have time for one more question. What do you find has been most rewarding about writing romantic suspense in your Amish-adjacent subgenre?
I think the most rewarding thing has been actually the relationships I've gained through writing.
Mm.
I mean, I have met some absolutely amazing people, other writers, my readers, and it is so amazing to hear about what other people do or what other places other people have traveled. And I just really cherish the way that has broadened my own world and my own base of people I have connection with.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to put it, and I think a great way to end our podcast. I wish we had more time, Dana, but we're out of time today, so thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you for inviting me. This was fun.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and my guest today has been Dana R. Lynn. She's an award-winning author of 18 books. Her latest is Plain Refuge, and you will hear an excerpt from that next. Thank you for joining me.
Now an excerpt from Plain Refuge by Dana R. Lynn. Are you close to making an arrest, Lieutenant?
Hold on a second.
Aiden Forrester glanced around, scanning his surroundings to ensure his call was private. He pretended to be messing with his helmet while he waited for a woman jogging with her dog to go by. Then he lifted his head and glanced around again. No one was in sight. Good. He raised his cell phone to his ear, making sure to keep his voice low, just in case there was someone lurking in the shadows. He knew all too well that information in the wrong hands could be deadly. He'd been a lieutenant in the narcotics division long enough to witness some routine operations go horribly wrong without warning. Police work could be brutal, sometimes devastating.
Close, ma'am. I hope to be able to have enough to move on within the next 2 weeks.
He chose his words carefully. Mentioning evidence or the chief's title were not words that would be misinterpreted if overheard.
Please, Lord, let me be telling the truth.
He had pulled over to take the call from his chief, knowing she was getting anxious to have this case over and done with. He was in full agreement with her there. The movies had made undercover work seem so cool, but the reality was the work was grueling, taking its toll emotionally and spiritually. After being on this operation for 6 months, he could feel it wearing him down. Every night he pulled out his Bible, trying to build up his strength for the next day. For nearly half a year, Aiden had played the part of Adam Steele, a hardened hired killer and drug dealer. His rap sheet was all fiction, created to give him a reputation for ruthlessness. His chief had also allowed several leaks to the press about him. All of it paid off when he'd been contacted by Philip Larson to do a few jobs on the side, mostly drug-related. It wasn't enough. The chief knew that Larson was involved with running drugs in the area. What they needed was proof to link him to cartels coming across the border, as well as two contract hits on politicians fighting against the cartels. Up to this moment, Aiden hadn't learned anything that could connect Larson to anything larger than some minor drug trafficking. Today could be a huge break in the case. Larson had invited him to his house for a private meeting with an important client.
He just had to play his part for a little bit longer. It was getting harder to continue the charade. The evil he faced, indeed a part of each and every day, was slowly breaking him apart. What really terrified him was the way the line between right and wrong seemed to be blurring. Not that he didn't still understand what was right, but he was aware on an alarming level of the desensitization occurring in himself. He had to hold on for just a little bit longer. If he could get what he needed, he could pull free. Then he'd go on a long vacation to recuperate. He'd earned it. "I'll give you the 2 weeks, but it might be necessary to pull you out sooner if you can't get it." Her strong voice, with its subtle Midwest accent, pulled him back to the conversation. When he started to protest, Chief Daniels interrupted him. "I'm serious, Aiden. You're one of my best lieutenants, but I'm concerned about your state of mind." So was he. As much as he wanted to find justice and put Philip Larson behind bars, he was beginning to wonder if he was losing himself in the dark world he'd been inhabiting. Still, the thought of giving in and allowing Larson to remain free to kill and harm those who got in his way made his teeth ache. He couldn't do it. His own partner had been a victim of Larson's evil reach. Tim had gotten an anonymous tip about a major deal going down. He had called it in and requested backup. Aiden had gotten there to aid his partner as soon as he could, but it wasn't fast enough. Tim had been ambushed, killed with a single shot to the back of his head. He owed it to Tim to end this. Then he could put his guilt at not arriving in time behind him. And it would be nice to be able to tell Tim's widow that her husband's killer had been brought to justice.
"I'll get him, ma'am. Then I'll be done with this cover for good."
And, hopefully, he'd never need to go undercover again. "See that you do. Are you on your way to him now?"
"Yep. He called a meeting. Not sure what about exactly. All I know is he said an important client would be meeting us at his house. And not to be late if I knew what was good for me."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.